Welcome to Module 2, Video 4, When to Test. So now you know a little bit more about the pathogenesis of SIBO, about why it's so important, but let's go over when you're actually going to consider testing. So sometimes there are these reasons why we would test for SIBO are more or less obvious. So the obvious ones are the common symptoms we associate with SIBO, which are actually common symptoms associated with irritable bowel syndrome. So there are things like gas, bloating, diarrhea, constipation, any sorts of signals of malabsorption. If you're suspecting somebody isn't getting nutrients, abdominal pain, discomfort, nausea. So any of those are really common signs. Now the gas with SIBO sometimes is malodorous, sometimes it's not. And it's interesting, one thing that we've seen in our clinical practice in context of the conversation of bloating is a word that not everybody seems to have a good sense of what that word means. Bloating is often confused with edema. So oftentimes we've realized in clinical practice, if we ask people if they feel bloated, they will say yes. And when we ask them to tell us more, they say, well, my rings don't fit in the morning. They notice that their fingers are swollen. So they're noticing lymphatic congestion or edema and calling it bloating. So we want to be very specific in that question and making sure that we're asking people, do you feel bloated in your abdomen? And so some specific questions I'll ask people could be, do you eat a meal and sometimes feel that your stomach feels a little distended or that you need to unbutton your pants or wear a different pant size after eating? So that's a sign of bloating. Or do sometimes when you bend over to say tie your shoe or put on your shoe after eating, do you feel a little uncomfortable in the abdomen? Another question that's common with SIBO and bloating is, when you travel, do you find that you actually need to bring a couple different pairs of pant sizes? So you're wearing multiple pant sizes when you're at home, but especially noticing it when you're traveling because you need to be prepared because you don't know how big your stomach's going to be that day. Any of those things are really trying to elicit the bloating that is associated with SIBO and not just an edema type of swelling that could be anywhere throughout the body. So other signs that somebody could have SIBO, one is an autoimmune diagnosis. And this again relates back to what we were talking about in the pathogenesis of SIBO, how SIBO can lead to intestinal permeability and how that can lead to autoimmunity. And what's so interesting about autoimmune diagnosis is that for SIBO, we have seen many autoimmune patients that are positive for SIBO and sometimes really severe for SIBO that, interestingly enough, do not have any gastrointestinal symptoms. So while commonly and almost always people with SIBO have classic IBS type of symptoms, in particular, the autoimmune population we see often does not even notice that they have any GI symptoms. So making sure that if somebody has an autoimmune diagnosis or symptoms or autoimmune markers coming up, that we want to make sure that we are testing for SIBO. Certainly a history of food poisoning due to that pathogenesis that we already talked about. History of abdominal surgery, and we talked about how that could also disrupt the migrating motor complex. Ehlers-Danlos connective tissue disorder has also been shown to be correlated with SIBO. So making sure that we're testing people with Ehlers-Danlos for SIBO. Osteoporosis, we also see in research, chronic fatigue syndrome, chronic regional pain syndrome. So any of these are signs of SIBO. Restless leg syndrome can certainly be things such as a dopamine deficiency as well, but there is connection between SIBO and RLS. H. pylori infection, we did go over that in the pathogenesis video. Rosacea, other skin issues are sometimes signs of SIBO. Postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, otherwise known as POTS, can be associated with SIBO, as well as histamine sensitivity and mast cell activation syndrome. We make an enzyme, diamine oxidase, in our enterocytes of the small intestine, and diamine oxidase is the enzyme that breaks down about 80% of histamine in our body. So when we have SIBO and we could have enterocyte dysregulation, we can have a lowered amount of activity of diamine oxidase, and that could increase histamine in the body. abdominal scarring. Obviously, this can often be a sign of surgery or gastrointestinal inflammation. And malabsorption is another one that we want to consider. So easy malabsorption signs are to say, do you have a high MCV on your CBC? So is your macrocyte size elevated? So we're seeing B12 deficiency signs there, or we're seeing iron deficiency signs, low iron, changes in hematocrit, these types of things. We want to consider that there could be possibly a SIBO reason for that malabsorption. So diseases that may mimic SIBO symptoms. Lactose intolerance is super interesting because lactose intolerance can basically mimic SIBO symptoms. So people can eat dairy and they can be intolerant to that lactose, and that lactose can ferment and cause a lot of gas. Now, interestingly enough, one of the causes behind that lactose intolerance could be an active SIBO infection, because lactose sugar will basically cause fermentation of the bacteria in the small intestine. So one of the ways of working with lactose intolerance is by looking to see if there's SIBO. And what we often find is that when we treat SIBO, we actually can get people back on good, healthy, full-fat dairy, that they are no longer lactose intolerant. SIFO is small intestinal fungal overgrowth. We'll be talking more about this in a later video. But SIFO is definitely a underdiagnosed condition as well, because fungus is very hard to find. It's actually quite hard to find on lab testing, and it can indeed cause symptoms very similar to SIBO: gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea, abdominal pain. So we always kind of look at SIBO. We test for it where we can and in the ways we can, but we also consider SIFO if we think it's SIBO, and if SIBO testing comes up negative and we're looking for other causes. Parasites are another thing, so making sure we're considering doing stool cultures to rule out parasites. Clostridium difficile. So Clostridium difficile oftentimes we think of as causing diarrhea, which it does. But what a lot of people don't realize is we can clear the infection, and some of the toxins, the virulence factors from C. diff, can remain in the intestinal tract. And those toxins can remain for years, and they can cause a variety of symptoms, not just diarrhea. They could cause gas or bloating or constipation in addition to diarrhea. So we definitely want to consider, is there a Clostridium difficile infection? And if there's not diarrhea, if there was previously a C. diff infection and the toxins are left behind. H. pylori can mimic SIBO symptoms, causing a lot of gastrointestinal issues. And food reactions, IgEs, IgAs, IgGs, can cause histamine from the IgEs. The IgAs and IgGs can cause other cascades through mechanisms such as complement, for example. They're going to cause a lot of inflammation and can still lead to a lot of bloating and discomfort and change in bowel habits. So definitely, and the reason this is important is that if we are testing for SIBO and SIBO is negative, these are other things that we are going to want to consider. Now, we're not going to have time in context of this short 6-week series to go through diagnosis and treatment of all of these different things, but definitely want to make you guys aware of these things. And if you do want to continue on from here, we do go through all of these different conditions in the advanced course. So the next video is going to be about how to test for SIBO, about what we're going to do to actually find small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. So we'll see you then.